People being mad about a Dodgers versus Yankees World Series matchup is dumb. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Tuesday, October 22nd, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rao. Christian S. Rao on the tweet box, R-A-U-H. And Christian, one of the big observations that I made yesterday across the internet, I know Twitter's not real life, but was that people are frustrated about the matchup in the World Series being Los Angeles Dodgers versus New York Yankees. And they're saying that these two teams just bought their rosters and it's the giant markets. And I don't get it. Why are people mad that this is the World Series matchup that we get?
Yeah, I don't understand either. You know, like we were talking about it yesterday, like as a baseball fan, I wasn't super excited about seeing Yankees Dodgers, but that's just more of the fact of seeing the big teams. I am a fan of the underdog. Great. But you finally got the biggest, you know, biggest two franchises in baseball to go against each other on the biggest stage. We haven't had that in such a long time. And if you remember last year's World Series, it was the Rangers and the Diamondbacks. Not many people were excited about that one either. So you have to pick which one you're going to be excited about. If it's not your team, you're not excited about it. Okay, fine. There's an okay spot for that, but That's only going to happen one out of every 30 times based on odds. So you got to take the love where you can get it. And you know, I can't believe I'm going to actually quote this, but Max Muncy said some really interesting things heading into the Yankees Dodgers World Series. And the quotes he said is, as a baseball fan, I mean, how could you not be excited about this? You're talking about two of the biggest franchises, the biggest stars of the sport, Shohei, Freddie, Mookie, and Aaron Judge, Soto, and Cole. How can you not be excited about this as a fan? And he's right. He's 100% right. This World Series is going to be absolutely electric. Wouldn't be surprised if they find a way to milk it for 7 games. And while they do that, you're probably going to have 30 million people watching every single second of it. So regardless of how people feel about this, I think it's going to wind up being one of the best World Series we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, like the biggest thing to me about this matchup is we haven't seen literally the stars align like this in a while. Like I had this stat on the show yesterday. You have what's expected to be the last two MVPs facing off against one another. That's only happened one other time in the 2000s, right? You have each league's home run leader facing off. You can even get into like StatCast stuff. The four highest barrel rates in baseball are guys in this game, right? Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Giancarlo Stanton, Juan Soto. Like, I mean, you have some of the biggest free agent signings, Garrett Cole versus Yamamoto. I mean, you have everything's lining up so great. And I would argue that the World Series matchup functions a lot. Think of it a lot like the Super Bowl. A lot of casual fans are going to tune in if there's a reason for them to tune in. You know, you go in the Super Bowl and there's the whole like Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, Taylor Swift's going to be there. And they had like record viewership in the Super Bowl. This is something where Shohei Ohtani's presence, the New York market, like you're going to have some of the better World Series viewership numbers that they've had in a long time, especially with the announcement. I love this. Especially with the announcement that every game is going to start at 8:08 p.m. Eastern, 5:08 p.m. Pacific. P.m. I said p.m., right? Yeah. There's not going to be any of these super late starts in L.A. or relatively early starts in New York for the people in Los Angeles. It'll all be after work hours for them. People, you know, those of us in the middle of the country get great start times. So you should be able to maximize viewership. I can remember days where I was watching World Series matchups and it was whether it was the Diamondbacks or it was, you know, the Astros, whatever. And these games didn't start till 9 p.m. Eastern. And so it feels like this is, to kind of close the book on these two teams, like, this is the best case scenario for baseball as a sport. If you're a fan of a smaller market team, and I use smaller market in quotation marks here, a smaller market team who feels like these two teams just spent their way to a World Series, it is very rare that the teams that spend the most make the World Series. This is not, it's not a guarantee in baseball. There is a correlation between spending money and success. And that kind of takes me into the next point here of, there was a lot of Cleveland Guardians fans who were, and I understand, you know, you're mourning the end of your season. It's fine. I'm not personally judging you for this, but a lot of them were frustrated about the payroll discrepancy between the Guardians and the Yankees. And they were expressing that MLB needed to do something to fix that because it wasn't fair. The owners of the Guardians are richer than the owners of the Yankees. The Steinbrenner family is not as wealthy as the Dolan family, and both of them are in the billions of dollars. The Guardians absolutely could run a higher payroll. And I think a lot of it comes down to, a lot of the frustration fans have with this matchup comes down to not wanting to admit that they are fans of a team that refuses to spend money like these franchises. So when these franchises, when everything happens to line up and two of the three highest payrolls make the World Series, they see it as a structural problem with baseball on the top end spenders, when in reality, the problem is that their franchises won't spend enough money to be consistently competitive every single year. And that's something that I think that is the biggest threat to baseball and the biggest thing you have to fix is these fans feeling like it's not fair when a big market team, you know, or a top payroll team makes the World Series, and they blame the top payroll team and not their own.
Yeah, and unlike any other sport, major sport in America, there is no salary cap in baseball. So there's no reason why all the other teams can't spend this much money. And you mentioned it, you know, using Cleveland as a great example. There seems like there's no excuse for that to happen. Now, I will say, I am not a fan of adding a salary cap to baseball. I don't think that that would help. I don't think that that would change competition level. I mean, it would change competition level, but I don't think it would be for the better. I think if you're going to do anything, you create a salary floor to make those owners actually spend. Because for such time, and Cleveland was one of these teams included, just a few years ago, I remember us joking. I might have been you and me on a show just a few years ago talking. Cleveland and Baltimore were two teams that hardly spent in free agency heading into, I want to say it was 2022. And they were just terrible. They were absolutely terrible. Cleveland, I think, still found a way to make the playoffs that year, which was insane. But they didn't spend any money in the offseason. They didn't spend any money at the deadline. By the way, these Yankees and Dodgers teams, yes, they spent a lot of money in the offseason, but they also traded a lot of prospects at the deadline to fill in the needs that they needed to make sure they were contending and ready to go in the postseason. Not everybody did that as well. They did. They bought, they sold their prospects. They did everything that an organization should do to get to this point in time. So do I feel like, yeah, this is just the two money hogs in the World Series? No, I don't. I don't think that's something that you should make this as the number one storyline. The number one storyline should be, we're getting Aaron Judge for Shohei Ohtani. The winner is going to get their first World Series championship and just another notch on what's probably most likely going to be a Hall of Fame career. Like, this is exciting. This should be a really exciting series for fans.
Yeah. And on the cap and floor comment, in the last CBA negotiations, MLB proposed a salary floor. And to kind of make sure everybody's on the same page, salary cap obviously is the limit of what you can spend. The floor is the minimum required, you know, spending on salaries. So, like, for instance, the NFL has a salary cap and floor. And the way that it works is they have a percentage in the NFL. you have to spend 89% of your available cap space over a four-year period. You can't consistently run payrolls significantly lower than the rest of the league. You're required. The cap is 255.4, I think, and you have to hit 89% of that over a four-year period, right? So you can dip down a little bit for a season, but you have to spend the money. And the NFL, arguably, with the exception of a few very consistent teams like the Chiefs, has very good parity. When MLB proposed a cap and floor, I'll remind you, under the previous CBA, the luxury tax started at $210 million, and the tax rate was 20%. They proposed a floor of $100 million, which sounds good, right? And then they proposed lowering the cap to $180 with a higher tax rate. So they were not making it a hard cap. You could exceed it, but it was going to be significantly lower than it had been. And the floor was going to be not anywhere near where people thought it should be. For context, this season, if the floor was at $100 million, there would only be five franchises below that. And two of them were within just a couple million. The Miami was at 97.5. Detroit was at 98.5, right? It would really, Tampa Bay would have had to add 11 and change in salary. The Pirates would have had to add just under 15 million in salary. Oakland would have been the real, they'd have had to add 37 million in salary. But everybody else was already already above 100 million. It's just so many of them were at, Cleveland was at 106. Cincinnati was 100.3. So many of them were lower than that. The mid-range payroll, the 16th payroll in baseball per spot track, the Seattle Mariners at 148 million. So the middle was somewhere between 147 and 148, between 16 and 17. A cap and floor, I think, has to eventually happen. If you make me baseball czar and give me the power unilaterally do whatever, I'm putting in a cap and floor. But I think my floor is going to be 150 at least. And it's going to automatically increase as the cap does. And I would go higher if I could. But this is a good World Series matchup from a baseball perspective. And if you're not happy because you feel like these teams bought their way to a World Series, one, they didn't. Christian made a good point of that. And two, be mad at your own team because just about every team in baseball can do that if they want to.
Yeah, 100%. And if you're still listening to this episode, thank you for letting us listen to or start yelling at clouds like we always do here. But no, this is going to be a good World Series. I'm really excited for it. And we're going to have a great week of shows for you. We're going to preview. We're going to have Troy come on as well. We're going to have a three-way preview of the World Series on Friday. But that doesn't mean we're going to be just stopping right there. The shows on Wednesday and Thursday are going to be great as well. We're going to give you full previews of this World Series, and we're going to really dig deep into, I think this one's going to go seven games. So there's already my prediction. I won't tell you who I think is going to win, but I think they're going to find a way to milk out this series to go seven games, Lindsay.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the World Series, teams that didn't make the World Series in the New York Mets and the Cleveland Guardians. We just brought, the Guardians up a minute ago when I was ranting there. If you had to pick one of those two to make it back to their respective championship series next year, who is it and why? Is it the Guardians? Is it the Mets?
I'm going to go with New York Mets. First, before I say that, I think the reason I can't say the Guardians is because I have not been able to predict for years who will win the American League Central. I just have no grasp on that division whatsoever.
You get it wrong every time.
Every time. So I'm going to stay away from it.
I thought the Royals had it.
I had no clue. What I did know is it wasn't the White Sox. That's what I did know. So who knows? Maybe they'll be the winners next year because I just can't get a grasp. But the New York Mets, and they're not going to be, by the way.
They're not.
I think I know that too. No. The New York Mets are going to spend. They're going to spend this offseason. I know it. It's going to be a very important offseason for the Mets, but they're going to find a way to return. And even with their shaky rotation, the names of that rotation weren't the names that you would expect to make an NLCS. They still found a way to do it. Their rotation was impressive. Even without Kodai Senga, who only pitched six innings in the regular season, he wasn't that great in the postseason, but I think they'll figure that out after a full year of recovery, full offseason of getting ready to go. And then I think they're going to add some pitching as well. And then let's not rule out the fact that Steve Cohen might find and do every way, shape, and possible form to pry Juan Soto away from the New York Yankees, Lindsay. That is a possibility. So I will say out of those two teams, I could see the New York Mets making a return back to the NLCS. And who knows, they might be in the World Series next year.
Yeah, the estimated payroll right now, the luxury tax payroll, which is different from the cash, but the luxury tax payroll for the Mets comes out to, I think, $358 million. The cash is like $336 million. But what people don't always necessarily remember out of that is $65 million of that cash payroll is going towards players no longer on this team, right? Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, James McCann, the catcher, he's getting only $8 million. It's a small part of that. But like the Mets have paid to get rid of players and get better prospects back when they tore things down last year. So Steve Cohen was willing to run a giant payroll knowing that by far they led the league in money, dead money that was not helping this year's team. The one thing I will say about this Mets team is there are exactly six players with guaranteed salaries in 2025, right? I mean, Lindor signed long-term, Nimmo and McNeil are signed long-term, Starling Marte's in the final year of his deal, Edwin Diaz, Cody Senga. There's a lot of free agents on this team. John Manea versus Luis Severino. I mean, a good portion of their bullpen, whether it's Adam Ottavino, Ryan Stanek, all of these guys, there's a club option on Maton, but like all of these guys are free agents. They've got a good number of arbitration guys and some pre-arb guys like Francisco Alvarez and Mark Vientos, but they've got a lot of holes to fill. Like you mentioned the rotation. Again, Manea, Severino, Quintana, also a free agent. A lot of directions they can go, but I do think the difference here is they have shown a willingness to spend money, whereas Cleveland is kind of they don't have a ton of big free agents, right? Shane Bieber is a free agent. They didn't have him this year anyway. Matthew Boyd is a free agent. That could be a pretty damaging loss. I think he'll be in demand as a lefty to potentially be a starter. They lose Alex Cobb, Austin Hedges, but a lot of what they do is arbitration and pre-arb guys. So a lot of continuity. They may make one or two or three signings to add to the roster, but it's mostly the same roster coming back. Whereas the Mets have the ability to upgrade on a lot of these spots where they got good but not great production. They can upgrade on a lot of those as long as they nail their evaluations, right? They got to get the starting pitchers right when they go and sign guys and things like that. And so I think I also have the Mets with the understanding that it's not as their ceiling's higher. Their floor is lower if they miss on some of these evaluations.
Steve Cohen has given us no other reason ever since he's taken over from the Wilpons that he's going to take a step back, right? There's a lot of open spots, as you mentioned, on this roster. I don't think it's going to turn into a rebuild or a different kind of approach. I think it's going to be a completely just a retool and move forward and be a competitive team once again in 2025. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think the Mets are going to be a team that's going to be right back in it. The National League East is going to be an absolute nightmare for everybody. Good luck, Miami Marlins, okay? Because it's going to be a four-team race, I think. I think the Nationals are going to be better, too. So, yeah, the National League East is going to be fun, and the Braves are going to retool, and they're going to be back, and the Phillies are still there. It's going to be a really fun division next year.
Yeah. All right. The Major League Baseball Players Association announced the finalists for the Players' Choice Awards yesterday. These are voted on. This is balloting by the Players Association. These are voted on by the players themselves. A couple interesting things in here. The league-wide awards that are not separated into specific leagues. The Marvin Miller Man of the Year Award. Braves starter Max Fried. Brewers first baseman Rhys Hoskins, Guardians left fielder Stephen Kwan, Twins starter Pablo Lopez. Take a lot of time to kind of go into what they do. I encourage you to go to MLBplayers.com and read up the write-ups on all those players and what they do. But I do want to kind of get predictions here from the two of us. Player of the Year finalists, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr. As I understand, this has already been voted on, so the World Series does not impact who wins this. Who do we see as the players voting for Player of the Year?
I think it's got to be Shohei Ohtani. What he has done, no one has ever done before, right? That 50-50 season is incredible. Yeah. Although it's a DH, the players don't have to worry about, you know, putting that into consideration. Knowing that Shohei Ohtani is arguably the best player on planet Earth swinging a baseball.
Yep.
And then he's, you know, swinging a baseball bat, excuse me. And he's doing it this season instead of pitching. You know, it's just wild to me.
Stealing almost 60 bases. Yeah.
Yeah. Insane. Insane. I think it's got to be Ohtani.
It feels like that to me, too. What is more surprising for guys that are nominated for multiple awards? That Chris Sale is not of the Braves is nominated both for outstanding pitcher in the National League and comeback player of the year, or that Paul Skeens is nominated for National League outstanding rookie and outstanding pitcher.
Most surprising is probably Skeens, because how can you expect someone to make that big of a step, you know, this season?
Yeah.
There was a huge, you know, a lot of people thought he was going to be great. I don't think you could expect him to be this great. Right. We've always knew that Chris Sale had what it took to be a all-star caliber pitcher. He showed it before his injuries years ago with the White Sox and all that good things. So
he just had to get back from the injuries. Yeah.
And he finally did. And getting into the Braves, you know, organization helped a lot. So that's not surprising to me. I think it's I think he deserves comeback player of the year because he's a Cy Young candidate. He probably is going to win the Cy Young as well. But I think the most surprising and the most impressive might be Paul Skeens. And man, what are we in for a treat with this guy for the next decade?
Golly, yeah. We're not going to pick winners on the awards that overlap with, you know, Rookie of the Year and Cy Young and things like that. But Comeback Player of the Year, American League, Garrett Crochet, Chad Green of the Blue Jays, Tyler O'Neill of the Boston Red Sox. It feels like this is Crochet's award to win, right?
Yeah, Crochet's a good one, but I mean, I wouldn't rule out Tyler O'Neill after the crazy ending he had with St. Louis and then coming back and just changing his entire landscape of what his career is going to look like moving forward with the Red Sox. He had a great year, hit a lot of home runs, even with a couple little injury stints as well involved in that.
Yeah.
And then the Red Sox had to overcome injuries as well with Trevor Story, and then they had to move around a lot of rookies, but O'Neill kind of stayed constant in that entire lineup for most of the year. I wouldn't rule out O'Neill, but Crochet is probably the pick.
Yeah. The write-up for O'Neill mentions he led baseball with a 750 slugging against lefties and finished second with 16 home runs off of southpaws this year. But Crochet missing, you know, coming back from Tommy John last year as a reliever, then moving into the rotation, making his first career start as the opening day starter, which is wild.
This is a player's award. Do you think his remarks at the trade deadline will change people's opinion on Crochet?
My hot take here is that more players agree with him than we realize. A guy that was facing workload concerns coming back from Tommy John, had barely pitched in, you know, missed all 22, barely pitched in 23, being asked to go up over a career high in innings, him saying, hey, can you pay me first? Because I, you know, acknowledging I could break down again. And then I got blown out for nothing. I think more players agree with him than we realize. I think the players will not hold that against him at all. There'll be a few old school guys who would be mad at the concept of that. But those are probably guys who already got paid and probably aren't well-liked in their clubhouses anyway. I think more players are on his side than we realize.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Just to me, we might see some interesting player votes in this one, and maybe the winner that we won't expect might come into play because they don't have to, or they don't follow the same rules that, you know, the Baseball Writers Association does. So it could be interesting.
True. National League Comeback Player of the Year, Rhys Hoskins, who missed all of 2023 with a torn ACL. Jurickson Profar, who was released by Colorado in late August of last year. And I think he either signed like a $1 million deal or a minor league deal with the Padres. And then Chris Sale. This feels like Chris Sale's just based on he went from barely pitching for 3 years to one of the more dominant seasons we've seen in a while.
Yeah, unless Sale gets like most outstanding pitcher in the National League, and then they want to like turn their minds to something else. I think Sale wins this one, but Profar is a pretty good candidate as well. What he's done this season, making his first All-Star appearance, he's going to get paid this offseason. It's going to be fun to watch him finally get what he deserves.
He absolutely is. All right, going to quick pitch real quick. We're going to wrap up with some minor league talk. The Arizona Fall League's in full swing, and it's hard to take too much from the Arizona Fall League, right? It's a hitter-friendly environment. It is a short sample size. But you have some guys who have really kind of dominated. Your leader in average OPS and second in home runs, Tigers catcher and first baseman Jose Bryceno. He is hitting .469 with a 1.514 OPS, 5 homers and 10 RBI in 8 games. This is something here where they need Bryceno behind the plate. He's still a ways away, right? He spent this last year he played 40 games in single A Lakeland, batted .278. This is age 19 season. I think he turned 20 in late September, but definitely a player that young to stand out and have a great Arizona Fall League debut so far. There's kind of a trend in here, and it's the big power guys doing well, and it's the very young players doing well. Dodgers
His power is really interesting. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but yeah. He's a big dude, 6'4", 200 pounds. And you mentioned 5 home runs in 8 games. Let's put that in perspective real quick, Lindsay. Across his minor league career so far, 3 seasons, 139 games, he only has 13 home runs. So he's making a major improvement in the Arizona Fall League. Only was in high A last season. I think he was only in low A last season. So yeah, he's going to make a jump. I would not be surprised to see him in double A next year, maybe see him with Erie. It could be a really exciting time for the Tigers. And that's exactly what they need right now. The Tigers need some more depth, and that you could always use an extra catcher.
Yeah. I mean, he probably wouldn't debut until, I think, at earliest 2026, but this is one of those things where just a big jump there. You'd love to see that. And then Marlins outfielder Kemp Alderman, drafted out of kind of my neck of the woods. I watched him in the SEC when he played for Ole Miss, second round pick in 2023, really struggled in full season ball this year. Started off single A, high A, double A, batted .242 with 8 home runs in 77 games. But in Arizona so far, 8 games, he's got 6 home runs. 7 of his 10 hits are for extra bases, 80 RBI, 8 runs. The one concern that is still there, one that we've seen for a while for him, 4 walks to 11 strikeouts. He's been struggling with the strikeouts. He had 78 strikeouts last year in 77 games. And again, a lot of those were lower level. An SEC performer should be able to come into single A and do pretty well. Heck, they should be able to go into high A and play pretty well. He batted .240 in high A with about 1 strikeout a game. So a little bit of concern there, but for the most part, is he on track to be a slugging corner outfielder from Miami that they need, or is this this is the Arizona Fall League? You can't read too much into this.
They need to find some balance with him, because this is technically his 5th level of baseball in 2024. Started in rookie ball, played double A, played 4 levels in the regular season and count Arizona Fall League. This is his 5th level of baseball, Lindsay. So they got to find a good balance with him. Just give him a full season somewhere, at least a half season somewhere.
If I remember right, I think the rookie ball thing was him rehabbing a minor injury. I don't think they started him there. If I remember right, I think it was late May before he actually even took the field. Mm. I think that was him being nicked up in the spring and waiting to rehab. But yeah, I mean, it's you could argue he batted .270 in single A. You could argue he held his own there, so they bumped him up to high A and they gave him like a week in double A to end the season. That was really something that felt like, you see this a lot because the ending of the seasons are all staggered in the minor leagues, like by a week for every level. Like they just didn't want his season to end because he missed so much time. So they bumped him to double A for a week. That season ended September 15th. They turned around 2 or 3 weeks later and send him to Arizona to get more playing time to make up for what he missed. I feel like that's probably a better explanation.
Pensacola's outfield was loaded last year too. So and I'm not sure what's going to happen at the beginning of next year, but if they can find a spot for him to play everyday stuff in Pensacola, then I think that'd be a nice spot for him, because I do think he has the opportunity to be a power corner outfielder for this team. And what Peter Bendix did this past offseason, or really this past year in the draft as well, it's kind of exciting. It's actually really exciting to see what he can do with these prospects in this organization, something that we haven't been able to say about the Marlins in quite some time.
They've been good at bringing up pitchers, it feels like, but they haven't necessarily done a good job with their position players. They've got to get more impact. Jacob Berry, one of the big standout issues there. You think about he played 50 games in right for that same, Pensacola team, batted 238 with a 666 OPS. Just not a good look there, really. Got to do something different than that. Only hit 9 home runs in 104 games, which is really kind of worrisome there. But yeah, a lot of guys in that outfield. Jacob Berry, Shane Sasaki, Nathan Martorella after the trade, Jacob Marcy, who they got from the Padres and Luis Arraez deal. A lot of options there. A lot of guys. Curious to see what they can do. We will be back. More First Pitch. We're not quitting just because there's no baseball till Friday. But until then, if you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop new episodes, and tell your friends to go to firstpitchpodcast.com to check out more of Lindsay and Christian on First Pitch. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.